Did you know that the brain of a newborn is the most remarkable work in progress in existence? While we often marvel at babies' first steps or words, the true miracle is happening silently inside their skulls, where billions of neurons are forming connections at the astonishing rate of 1.8 million synapses per second. Lise Eliot's groundbreaking book, What's Going On in There, has become a cornerstone text for understanding early brain development, beloved by parents, educators, and neuroscientists alike. As both a mother and neuroscientist, Eliot brings a unique dual perspective to this exploration of how experiences shape our children's minds from conception through early childhood. Her work has influenced parenting approaches worldwide and has been cited by celebrities like Natalie Portman and Serena Williams, who've publicly discussed how understanding brain development transformed their parenting. The book's enduring popularity speaks to our fundamental desire to understand the most complex organ in the universe as it takes shape in our children. The age-old nature versus nurture debate has swung like a pendulum throughout scientific history. Earlier in the 20th century, environmental influences dominated thinking, exemplified by Renee Spitz's famous studies comparing infants in foundling homes to those in prison nurseries. The devastating outcomes for institutionalized babies with minimal human contact demonstrated environment's profound impact. Today, we live in the era of the gene, with daily discoveries linking chromosomes to diseases and behaviors. Yet neuroscientists cannot fully embrace genetic determinism. While genes matter tremendously, the brain's remarkable plasticity reveals how experience literally molds neural circuits. Every sensation, every interaction, every thought modifies connections for future processing. Our brain hardware isn't fixed at birth, but remains dynamic tissue, constantly updating itself to meet sensory, motor, emotional, and intellectual demands. This explains why babies aren't born with blank slates, but arrive with specific mental skills uniquely suited to early life needs. The nervous system matures in a programmed sequence from tail to head, with the spinal cord and brainstem nearly fully developed at birth to control vital functions. Higher brain areas progressively take control as the cerebellum, basal ganglia, limbic system, and finally the cerebral cortex mature. This developmental sequence appears genetically programmed, explaining why infants worldwide progress through identical milestones on similar schedules. Yet babies are born with primitive brains precisely to enable learning. Their brains are adaptation machines that build themselves to fit their environment. While genes program the sequence of neural development, environmental factors shape its quality at every stage, creating countless interactions between nature and nurture that determine how a child's brain gets wired. The brain's remarkable development begins just weeks after conception. By day 25, the neural plate folds into a groove that fuses along its edges to form a tube running most of the embryo's length. The top of this neural tube transforms into three primary swellings, forebrain, midbrain, and hindbrain, by 4 weeks post-fertilization. By week 5, these swellings subdivide further, with the frontmost, telencephalon, beginning to divide into left and right hemispheres. By 6 weeks, these structures differentiate into all major brain components: pons, medulla, cerebellum, thalamus, basal ganglia, limbic system, and cerebral cortex. At 8 weeks, the now 2-inch-long baby transitions from embryo to fetus, with all major organ systems in place, though still minimally functional. The remarkable similarity between vertebrate embryos reveals evolutionary relationships. While humans don't literally pass through a lizard stage, animals with closer evolutionary relationships resemble each other longer during embryonic development. This developmental conservation makes evolutionary sense. It's easier to add changes at the end of a common developmental sequence than alter early processes. The human brain develops through the proliferation and organization of billions of neurons, tree-like cells with dendrites receiving input, axons transmitting information, and cell bodies managing metabolism. The scale is staggering. 100 billion neurons form at roughly 250,000 per minute over gestation, with actual rates exceeding 500,000 per minute during peak periods. After formation, neurons migrate outward along radial glial tracts to predetermined positions, with cortical neurons settling in 6 layers in an inside-out sequence. By mid-gestation, neurons have reached their destinations, but they're merely saplings with minimal connections. The critical process of synaptogenesis begins as early as 7 weeks, but continues through gestation and well into the first 2 years of life. The most astounding feat in neural development is how billions of neurons and quadrillion synapses get properly connected. With only about 80,000 genes in the human genome, far too few to specify each connection, the brain forces synapses to compete in a Darwinian use-it-or-lose-it process. Synapses that receive more electrical activity stabilize and strengthen, while less active ones regress and disappear. Children lose approximately 20 billion synapses per day between early childhood and adolescence, making mental processes more streamlined but less flexible as they mature. Jessica struggles with pregnancy symptoms while her sister reassures her it's worth it to protect her developing baby. The central nervous system is particularly vulnerable to prenatal influences because its development spans from 3 weeks after conception through birth and beyond. While prenatal experience matters, the womb's relative isolation provides optimal protection for early brain development. This is evidenced by the many problems affecting premature babies, who, despite advances in neonatology, remain at higher risk for neurological issues. Even pregnancy symptoms like fatigue and morning sickness, likely caused by human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, may serve to protect the embryo during its most vulnerable phase by limiting the mother's activities and diet. Though the placenta offers protection, it's not foolproof. Almost every substance in the mother's bloodstream crosses to some degree. Neural tube defects, NTDs, occur during the critical period between 22-28 days after conception, when the neural tube must properly fuse. Fortunately, taking folic acid, 0.4 milligrams daily, before conception and during early pregnancy, reduces first-time NTD occurrence by about 60%. Nutrition's impact on brain development depends critically on timing. While the brain is sensitive to specific deficiencies like folic acid during early formation, it's actually less dependent on the mother's total caloric intake during the first trimester. However, from midway through gestation until about 2 years after birth, brain growth becomes highly sensitive to both quantity and quality of nutrition. This critical period aligns with the explosion of synapse development, dendritic growth, and myelination that wires the brain and increases its weight. Drugs and chemicals pose varying risks to fetal development. Alcohol, called the teratogen of choice in our culture, causes fetal alcohol syndrome, FAS, in about 2 of every 1,000 babies born. Alcohol directly kills fetal neurons, disrupts neuronal migration, and interferes with dendritic growth and synaptic connections. Even moderate exposure, 3 drinks daily, results in measurable IQ decrements of about 7 points compared to unexposed children. Smoking during pregnancy, while not as detrimental to fetal brain development as heavy alcohol consumption, compromises many organ systems, including the heart and lungs. Babies born to heavy smokers average 0.5 pound lighter than those born to non-smokers. Virtually every illicit drug has been linked to higher rates of brain defects or developmental delays. For women who don't smoke, drink, use drugs, or face occupational hazards, infections represent perhaps the most significant risk during pregnancy. Several pathogens can cause brain malformations or later mental deficits, with dangers greatest during early gestation before the fetal immune system develops. Medical professionals track these dangerous prenatal infections using the TORCH mnemonic: toxoplasmosis, rubella, cytomegalovirus, herpes, and others. Birth is possibly the most traumatic event we ever experience, with the baby's brain bearing the brunt of this trauma. The infant's disproportionately large head serves as a battering ram during delivery, enduring powerful contractions as it's forced through the birth canal. Though physical trauma is inevitable, the greatest danger comes from potential oxygen deprivation, hypoxia, which can cause lasting brain damage. Fortunately, a baby's brain tolerates brief hypoxia better than an adult's, and most modern obstetric innovations aim to prevent such damage. Despite these risks, most babies survive birth well, and growing evidence suggests birth stress may actually help adapt the fetus to life outside the womb. During labor, the baby's brain endures both physical compression and temporary oxygen reduction with each contraction. Surprisingly, this stress benefits full-term babies. Like adults in fight-or-flight situations, fetuses respond to labor stress with surging catecholamine hormones. Head compression in the birth canal triggers a 20-fold increase in these hormones, though the baby's body reacts differently than an adult's would to this hormonal flood. While catecholamines increase heart rate in adults, they decrease heart rate in babies, helping them conserve oxygen during labor. These elevated hormone levels remain high for about 30 minutes after birth, aiding in the critical adjustment period. Babies born vaginally show quicker first breaths, better oxygen levels, and fewer respiratory problems than C-section babies. Following delivery, newborns experience a brief period of heightened alertness, with their senses fully focused on their parents. While researchers once proposed this first hour marked a critical, sensitive period for parent-infant bonding, we now understand that parental love evolves gradually throughout a child's first year, not instantly at birth. Nevertheless, these studies positively influenced hospital practices, encouraging skin-to-skin contact, immediate breastfeeding, and rooming in rather than automatic nursery placement. Touch is one of a baby's most advanced abilities at birth. While newborns like week-old Phoebe can't see well, they love being held, feeling their mother's cradling arm and warm breast against their cheek. Though not fully developed at birth, a baby's somatosensory system functions better than vision, hearing, or even taste. Early touching experiences are crucial not only for developing later tactile sensitivity and motor skills, but also for the baby's health and emotional well-being. Touch encompasses four distinct sensory abilities with separate neural pathways: cutaneous sensation, feeling contact on skin, temperature, pain, and proprioception, sensing body position and movement. When 8-month-old Jason grabs a cold teething ring, pressure activates touch receptors in his fingers that generate electrical signals traveling up his arm, through his spinal cord, crossing to the opposite side in his brainstem, through the thalamus, and finally to his somatosensory cortex. The distortion in our brain's touch maps stems from both genetic programming and experience. While our bodies are genetically programmed to develop more sensory receptors in areas needing greater sensitivity, like fingertips, the final competition for cortical space depends on sensory experience. Studies in mice show that whisker sensation is necessary to produce normal whisker representation in the brain. Touch is the very first sense to emerge in human development. By just 5.5 weeks after conception, embryos can sense touch to the lips or nose. This sensitivity rapidly extends across the body to chin, eyelids, and arms by the 9th week, legs by the 10th, and nearly the entire body surface by the 12th week. Babies develop touch sensitivity in a head-to-toe sequence, with the mouth being the first and most sensitive region. Even at 5 years, children's touch sensitivity remains greater in the face than hands. Newborns can distinguish different shaped nipples with their mouths, and remarkably, 1-month-olds can visually recognize objects they've only explored orally, showing cross-modal sensory integration. Touch provides vital benefits across virtually all mammalian species. Physical contact is essential for normal infant development, whether through maternal licking in cats, dogs, rodents, or holding in primates. Without this stimulation, newborn animals often die from failure of basic bodily functions, though artificial stimulation through rubbing can sometimes compensate. Scientists have discovered that rat pups handled briefly each day show remarkable lifelong advantages: less fearfulness, better modulated stress responses, more brain receptors for anxiety-reducing neurotransmitters, less age-related brain degeneration, and better cognitive performance. These benefits occur only when handling happens during the critical first 10 days of life. babies have a natural affinity for motion from birth, whether rocking, jiggling, bouncing, or being carried. This attraction stems from their highly developed vestibular system, an evolutionarily ancient sixth sense that perceives body movement and balance. Like the sense of touch, the vestibular system develops early in embryonic growth and provides sensations that both comfort babies and support critical brain development. The vestibular system functions largely below the cerebral cortex level, becoming noticeable only when overstimulated, as during turbulent flights. It plays an essential role in maintaining head and body posture and coordinating precise movements, especially of the eyes. By detecting gravity's direction and bodily motion, it allows us to maintain balance and smoothness of action. The vestibular system begins differentiating when an embryo is just half an inch long. Both the vestibular apparatus and cochlea develop from a common structure called the otocyst, but the vestibular system progresses more rapidly than hearing. By 5 weeks after conception, three ridges that will become vestibular canals fold from the otocyst wall, transforming into semicircular canals by 7 weeks. Vestibular sensitivity is the second most precocious sensory skill after touch. At just 10 weeks after conception, a fetus becomes responsive to movement. By 12 weeks, it reflexively moves its eyes in response to head position changes. A mature vestibular system allows a fetus to sense orientation and turn head down before birth. The vestibular senses play a surprisingly important role in mental and neurological development. Children with deficient vestibular responses often show delayed motor development, with some not walking until as late as 4 years. Vestibular deficits are also frequently found among children with emotional problems, perceptual or attention deficits, learning disabilities, language disorders, and autism. Evidence suggests supplemental vestibular stimulation can improve a baby's brain development. One study exposed 3 to 13-month-old babies to chair spinning sessions and found they developed more advanced reflexes and motor skills compared to control groups. A set of 3-month-old twins in the study showed dramatic differences. The stimulated twin mastered head control and independent sitting by 4 months, while the unstimulated twin had just begun holding his head up.
Smell plays a vital role in our lives, from food selection to social interactions, especially parent-infant bonding. For newborns with developing vision and hearing, smell, taste, and touch are crucial for growth and survival. Smell is unique among senses, as information travels directly from nose to cerebral cortex without relay through lower brain centers. Odor molecules dissolve in nasal mucus, binding to receptors on olfactory epithelial cells, which convert chemical signals to electrical ones. The olfactory system matures early, developing during gestation. Fetuses detect odors and flavors from their mother's environment by 28 weeks, when olfactory neurons complete their biochemical specialization. Prenatal experiences shape development. Fetuses respond to amniotic fluid odors, and early scent associations persist after birth. Newborns demonstrate sophisticated olfactory abilities, responding to scents through movement, sucking, crying, or breathing changes. They excel at recognizing their mother's breast odor and prefer unwashed breasts immediately after birth, showing better scent discrimination than adults. Taste develops during the third trimester, with babies showing clear preferences at birth. They respond positively to sweetness, particularly to breast milk, displaying facial relaxation, sucking, and slowed heart rate. Sweet taste is innately pleasurable, with sucrose being their preferred sugar. Human milk is evolutionarily optimized for infant development. Beyond basic nutrition, it contains enzymes, immune factors, hormones, and growth factors that enhance nutrient absorption, protect against infection, and support organ development. Research consistently shows breastfed children demonstrate superior cognitive development, performing better on mental development tests in early childhood and academic achievement tests through age 10.
Unlike the well-developed senses of touch, smell, taste, and vestibular perception at birth, vision remains primitive in newborns. Babies like Jenna can only see clearly about 8 inches ahead, with details lost in a blur. However, rapid neuronal wiring in the visual cortex dramatically improves vision within months,
By 6 months, depth perception, color vision, fine acuity, and eye movement control emerge, and by 1 year, these abilities are nearly fully developed. Vision's apparent simplicity masks enormous complexity. The brain devotes more territory to vision than all other senses combined. The process begins when light passes through the cornea, is focused by the lens, and strikes the retina's three-layered neurons. The brain must not only map color and intensity, but interpret what the eyes see, identifying objects, their locations in 3D space, and their movement. Visual perception divides between brain hemispheres. The left brain processes the right visual field and vice versa. This requires complex routing at the optic chiasm, where ganglion cell axons cross over. Those seeing the right visual field terminate in the left LGN, regardless of which eye they originate from. Each brain hemisphere receives input from both eyes, with careful segregation maintained in the LGN's layers and in columns of neurons in the primary visual cortex, V1. The brain processes visual information through 32 distinct areas in each cortical hemisphere, each specialized for different aspects of vision, like shape, color, motion, or depth. These modules are organized into two main processing streams. The where stream, maturing earlier, specializes in detecting motion, speed, and spatial location, while the what stream identifies objects by color, shape, and detail. As the visual cortex explodes with new synapses between 2 and 8 months, a baby's vision rapidly improves from the blurry, limited sight of newborns to nearly adult level by 1 year. Newborns see through what seems like a frosted window, with poor acuity, 20/600, weak contrast sensitivity, limited focal range, 7 to 30 inches, partial color perception, and no depth perception. They see better at the periphery of their visual field than the center. Despite limitations, newborns are drawn to bold patterns, black and white designs, bright colors, faces, and movement. Their vision is optimized for seeing family faces and coordinating hand movements within their reach. As the brain matures, eye movements shift from jerky saccades to smooth tracking, 2 months, to anticipatory tracking, 3 to 6 months. Unlike vision, which develops late but matures quickly, hearing begins early and matures gradually. Babies have 12 weeks of listening experience before birth and already show preferences, favoring mother's voice and complex sounds like music over simple tones. Newborns find music highly appealing, which explains why lullabies effectively calm fussy babies. Hearing begins when sound waves enter the ear and are converted to electrical signals. Sound waves travel through the outer ear to the eardrum, causing vibrations that are amplified by the three middle ear bones, malleus, incus, and stapes, before reaching the fluid-filled inner ear. In the cochlea, hair cells convert vibrations to electrical signals. Hearing development begins remarkably early, just 4 weeks after conception, when otocysts form on either side of the embryonic head. By 11 weeks, the cochlea has completed its characteristic coil, though it continues growing until mid-gestation. Between 10-20 weeks, approximately 16,000 hair cells in each cochlea mature, developing in a gradient from base to apex. Just because preterm babies show electrical responses to sounds doesn't mean fetuses process sound the same way. Research using ultrasound to observe fetal movements, blinking responses, and heart rate changes shows fetuses can hear by 23 weeks gestation. Initially, they respond only to loud, low-pitched tones, but their hearing range and sensitivity improve weekly. Studies using microphones placed in the uterus during labor reveal that sounds penetrate the womb remarkably well, especially lower frequencies. The fetal auditory environment includes the mother's heartbeat, blood flow, stomach gurglings, and voice, which is louder to the fetus than to outside listeners, along with external sounds like the father's voice, TV, and other environmental noises. Fetuses not only hear, but remember what they hear. Controlled experiments show newborns prefer their mother's voice to a stranger's and can distinguish between stories heard repeatedly in the womb versus new stories. Babies tested shortly after birth sucked more to hear the Cat in the Hat when their mothers had read it aloud twice daily during the last 6 weeks of pregnancy. Birth dramatically changes a baby's auditory environment. The comforting sounds of the mother's heartbeat and internal bodily functions disappear, while external sounds become clearer without the filtering effect of the mother's body and the fluid in the baby's ears. Newborns have significant hearing limitations. Their threshold is 40 to 50 decibels higher than adults, making them deaf to quiet sounds, and they hear low frequencies better than high ones. Parents often become consumed by their baby's motor development, comparing milestones with other children at playgrounds and elsewhere. These visible markers of neurological progress include both gross motor skills, coordinating large muscles for posture and locomotion, and fine motor skills, using smaller muscles in arms and hands for manipulation. Babies follow a predictable progression, controlling their head, rolling over, sitting, crawling, standing, and finally walking around the first year's end. Fine motor development advances from whole arm swatting to precise pincer grasps between thumb and forefinger. The most striking aspect is the predictability. Virtually every baby from every culture acquires these skills in the same sequence, though individual timing varies. Movement requires incredibly complex neural processing, with information continuously cycling between brain and body. Even a simple action like flexing your biceps begins in the motor areas of the frontal lobe, primary motor cortex, supplemental motor area, and premotor cortex, which sends signals down the corticospinal tract to motor neurons in the spinal cord. Motor development begins long before birth, with the first spontaneous movements appearing just 6 weeks after conception. By 8 weeks, fetuses make isolated limb movements, and by 9 weeks can bring a hand to the face. The first trimester sees the emergence of hiccuping, stretching, yawning, sucking, swallowing, and grasping. Motor milestones follow such predictable timing that a baby's age can often be determined by observing their abilities rather than their size. This predictability stems from three major gradients of motor maturation in the brain. First, development progresses from lower to higher brain regions. Spinal cord circuits mature before birth, followed by brainstem, primary motor cortex, and finally higher motor areas in the frontal lobe. Second, babies gain control of central body parts, trunk and head, before peripheral parts, limbs and hands, as neck and torso muscles are controlled by the earlier maturing brainstem. Third, within the primary motor strip, development proceeds from head to toe, explaining why babies master facial movements before arm control, which precedes leg movements. When a baby takes their first independent steps around the end of the first year, it marks a momentous developmental milestone that boosts cognitive and social growth. Walking upright on two legs is especially difficult, requiring significant strength and stability to balance briefly on one leg. While the basic neural mechanism for walking, the central pattern generator, CPG in the spinal cord, matures very early, by 24 weeks in utero, explaining newborn stepping reflex, this reflex disappears by 6 to 8 weeks, not because of cortical inhibition, but because babies become too heavy to lift their legs. Emotions dominate early life, with babies communicating through emotional expression before language. This emotional foundation underlies all other mental development. The limbic system bridges the cerebral cortex and brainstem. Its lower structures generate universal physical responses from birth, racing hearts, facial expressions, while the upper limbic cortex enables conscious emotional experience and control, developing gradually in infants. The amygdalae, two almond-shaped structures in the temporal lobes, are the limbic system's hub. They develop early and monitor all sensory input and mental activity, alerting both higher and lower brain areas to emotional events. Damage to the amygdala results in emotional blindness, similar to autism symptoms. At birth, babies have about half their emotional hardware, the lower limbic system. The amygdala functions from birth, allowing physiological responses, while the limbic cortex, crucial for emotional awareness, develops slowly. The orbitofrontal cortex becomes functional around 6 to 8 months. Despite their undeveloped limbic cortex, newborns express basic emotions through well-developed facial muscles and distinct cries for different needs. The first major milestone occurs at 6 weeks with social smiling, genuine responses to specific social cues appearing universally across cultures. A significant leap in emotional development occurs around 6 months as higher limbic centers activate. PET scans show increased medial frontal lobe activity around 8 months, coinciding with rapid synapse growth. By 10 months, babies show adult-like brain activity patterns in response to emotional stimuli, indicating mature emotional processing. Memory forms the cornerstone of intellectual growth, yet develops gradually in children. Though babies experience and respond to their environments, these early experiences aren't retained long-term, a phenomenon called infantile amnesia. Most adults cannot recall events before age 3.5, with memories remaining sketchy until age 5 or 6. The brain stores different forms of memory in separate systems. Most familiar is the distinction between short-term memory, like remembering a phone number long enough to dial it, and long-term memory, information stored for minutes to decades. But memories also differ by consciousness level. Explicit memories are conscious recollections of facts or events we can deliberately recall. Implicit memories are unconscious, stored skills, habits, and conditioned responses we've learned through experience but aren't aware of knowing. Memory storage involves multiple brain regions working in concert. The hippocampus is essential for conscious memory. This elongated structure sits behind the amygdala in the inner temporal lobe. Three other regions are crucial for long-term memory: the medial thalamus, which degenerates in Alcoholic-Korsakoff syndrome, the basal forebrain, which produces acetylcholine, depleted in Alzheimer's, and the prefrontal cortex, responsible for source memory, knowing when or where something happened. Memory development follows the brain's maturational timeline. Implicit memories emerge first, stored in precocious lower brain areas like the spinal cord and brainstem. As the basal ganglia and cerebellum mature during early infancy, babies' implicit memory skills expand. Cortex-dependent memories develop more slowly, with source memory emerging quite late due to the protracted development of the frontal lobes. Even before birth, fetuses form simple memories through their developing nervous systems. Habituation, the gradual decrease in response to repeated stimuli, appears as early as 23 weeks gestation and is universal by 29 weeks. This crucial form of information storage allows fetuses to screen out constant stimuli, like the maternal heartbeat, conserving energy for growth. Studying memory in pre-verbal infants requires indirect methods developed through animal learning research. Operant conditioning, where babies learn associations between their actions and rewards, provides a valuable window into infant memory. Babies quickly refine their skills by remembering that certain behaviors, sucking, smiling, reaching, produce rewards, milk, mother's smile, toys. Around 8 months, babies develop recall, the ability to remember without direct re-exposure to the original stimulus. This cognitive milestone coincides with complete formation of granule neurons in the hippocampal dentate region, myelination of limbic pathways, and increased frontal lobe activity. Unlike recognition, automatic and reflexive, recall is conscious and deliberate. 8-month-olds can retrieve hidden toys and experience separation anxiety because they can maintain mental images of objects or people briefly after they disappear, the ability known as object permanence. Parents often shift from monitoring motor skills to tracking language acquisition in their child's second year, watching for each new word milestone. Children master language with remarkable ease compared to adults learning new languages. By age 3 or 4, they speak in complex grammatical sentences without formal instruction, suggesting language is an innate human instinct like sleeping or eating. Language processing is primarily localized in the left hemisphere for most people, with the right hemisphere contributing emotional emphasis through prosody. The parasylvian cortex houses key language areas. Broca's area manages grammar and syntax, while Wernicke's area processes word meanings. This neural organization explains language development patterns. Babies start with single words, mostly nouns, advance to two-word telegraphic phrases, and only after age 3 produce fully grammatical speech. Language development requires both brain maturation and social experience. The brain's language network develops properly only when exposed to coherent combinations of sound, meaning, and grammar during a critical early period. Cases of linguistic deprivation, like Jeannie and Victor, demonstrate the consequences of missing this window. Infants begin with the ability to distinguish phonemes from any language, but gradually specialize in their native tongue. By 6 months, they lose sensitivity to foreign vowels, and by 10-12 months, to foreign consonants, reflecting neural efficiency in processing native speech sounds. Babbling plays a crucial role in speech development. Starting with universal cooing sounds around 2 months, babies progress to canonical babbling near 5 months, adding consonants and creating repetitive strings like ba-ba-ba-ba. This practice is essential for developing the motor coordination needed for speech. Intelligence development is most dramatic in early childhood, as the brain triples in size and forms crucial synaptic connections. This growth enables progression from basic perception to complex thinking through the interaction of neural development and experience. While intelligence has no single brain center, certain biological features correlate with cognitive ability. Brain size shows a modest relationship with IQ. Head circumference correlates 0.14 with IQ, while brain volume measurements show a 0.35 correlation. However, cognitive development continues even after brain size stabilizes and synaptic pruning begins. Mental processing speed also indicates intelligence. Higher IQ individuals demonstrate faster reaction times and more complex event-related potentials, ERPs, suggesting superior stimulus processing. Neural transmission speed increases 16-fold from birth to adolescence. The prefrontal cortex, prominent in humans but minimal in other mammals, is crucial for sophisticated mental activities like attention, memory, language, planning, and self-awareness. Young children share characteristics with adults with frontal lobe damage, including poor time sense and limited self-control, because frontal lobes mature more slowly than other brain regions. They're the last to form fissures in utero and continue developing through late adolescence, with synaptic density peaking around age 7. Even with limited neural connections, young infants show remarkable cognitive abilities when tested through looking rather than doing. 4-week-olds can store abstract mental representations, as demonstrated by the Nubby pacifier test. By age 6, children reach a significant cognitive milestone enabling formal education, marked by improved inhibitory control and ability to delay gratification. This advancement reflects brain maturation, particularly in the frontal lobe. Intelligence development is split equally between genetics and environment, with parents having significant influence during early brain development. Family structure plays a crucial role, with socioeconomic status and parental education strongly correlating with IQ. These factors affect access to resources, healthcare, and quality education. Birth order impacts intelligence, with firstborns scoring 3.5 points higher on IQ tests than later siblings. Children born less than a year apart score 4 points lower than those with wider spacing, partly due to divided parental attention. Prenatal care accounts for up to 20% of IQ variance. Modern practices like avoiding alcohol and tobacco, taking vitamins, and regular medical monitoring have contributed to rising IQ scores. Nutrition is particularly crucial from 4 months gestation through age 2, with malnourishment leading to smaller brains, fewer neurons, and developmental delays. Prenatal care accounts for up to 20% of IQ variance. Modern practices like avoiding alcohol and tobacco, taking vitamins, and regular medical monitoring have contributed to rising IQ scores. Nutrition is particularly crucial from 4 months gestation through age 2, with malnourishment leading to smaller brains, fewer neurons, and developmental delays. Environmental enrichment significantly impacts brain development. Children need freedom to explore and access varied play materials in safe, organized spaces. However, adult-child interactions prove even more vital, with 4 key parenting qualities correlating with intellectual success: nurturing, responsiveness, involvement, and demandingness. formal education plays a critical role in intelligence development. Studies show children lose approximately 6 IQ points annually without schooling, potentially testing in the intellectually disabled range by adolescents if deprived of education. While the ideal of perfect parenting might seem to require constant optimization of every factor, from prenatal care to educational enrichment, this pursuit can be counterproductive. Children learn more than cognitive skills from parents. They learn about life, relationships, and balance. Parents should remember that genetics plays an equal role in development, making it impossible to overcome all natural limitations through parenting alone. This understanding can help reduce parental guilt and allow for a more balanced approach to child rearing.